our systems have been more prone to treat youth as delinquents because there was an absence of options, absence of resources to serve them as victims and to protect them as children. And by default, we arrested them and detained them and prosecuted them. So I believe this provides an opportunity to do things differently and to do things right in our community. Fortunately, the law, the state law, is already in place to allow these individuals, these children, to be treated through the child welfare system. What we need really is to start changing the practices about how their cases are handled and how we as a community respond. So this this ordinance certainly points us in the right direction. And the other thing I will say, as a director of a nonprofit who's often concerned with seeking revenue, I know that the fact that the city is providing a dedicated stream of revenue to these services will make it much easier to attract revenue from other sources, whether it's from private sources, state or federal sources, in the future. And I think it is very wise for the city to dedicate these funds for this purpose. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jerry Williams, and in September, I celebrated 21 years of freedom from human trafficking. I also am getting ready to celebrate 4 years as a city employee of the city of Portland in November. I'm here to thank the commissioners and the mayor for supporting this ordinance. I'm grateful for your continuing dedication to protecting youth from violence and trafficking. What this ordinance can be is the first step to creating a sustainable funding source for shelter to keep victims from human trafficking in a safe place so that they can begin their healing. As a survivor, my first step in healing was, of course, to get away from my pimp. I went into dual diagnosis treatment in 1989, but still lived in fear for years. I was going to PCC and hadn't yet learned what I needed to know to keep myself and my kids safe. It wasn't until 4 years later, when I arrived at the West Women's Shelter, that I was in a safe place, safe enough to experience the full-blown post-traumatic stress disorder and get to the root of my problems. I was lucky enough to also have the opportunity to participate in a program called the Council for Prostitution Alternatives, which at the time was a program run by survivors that had significant resources. The combination of these two programs empowered me to become who I am today, and I'm forever grateful for that. I was an adult when this happened to me. Just think how much more intense it must be for a teenager. We need to create a safe place for them, not with bars, but with secure, with a secure place. Last week, I had 3 speaking engagements on this issue. The most fun was the 2 workshops I did at the Oregon Peacemakers Conference at University of Portland. The Peacemakers Conference brings in about 500 middle school and high schoolers to come learn how to become activists, which you know I love. So the majority of the students were in 7th and 8th grade. They seem so small. And after watching some film clips and having great discussions, they created 1-minute commercials that they presented before class. These are some of their messages. Many kids are trafficked over the internet. Stay away from guys that try to sweet talk you. Stop human trafficking. It could happen to you. I actually made all these into a video I can send to your office. So, but the one I wanted to read that you can't read in the video because there's so many words says, "Government of Oregon, we need you to recognize the seriousness that comes with human trafficking. The kids need your help. If you found out your son or daughter themselves was selling themselves for money, what would you do? Imagine how the parents feel. Young children don't want to go home to disappointment and anger from their parents. We need to help these kids who can't help themselves. They need shelter. Please help. Create shelters to help young men and women who already have lost so much." This was, and I've had the opportunity since speaking in 2008 with Commissioner Leonard to watch this blossom in front of us, to watch thousands of people become involved in this issue, people from churches, people from government, people from colleges, people from everywhere. It's incredible to see the amount of compassion there is for this issue. And I too believe that when you start, when you plant that seed of sustainability, that it does grow and attract more. So thank you so much for starting that and once again making me a very proud employee of the City of Portland.
Thank you all. Thank you very much.
The last panel invited, I wanted to invite up Jocelyn Baker of the Community Sexual Exploitation Committee. Miriam Green of the Department of Human Services is very active in overseeing and dealing with the number of children who are in custody of DHS right now who are involved in trafficking. And then Wynn Lakala, who is an extraordinary grassroots organizer. She formed the group Oregonians Against Trafficking of Humans, which has been very active on this issue. And so I wanted each one of them to have a chance to say something. We'll start with Wynn.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Wynn Wakala, Executive Director for Oregonians Against Trafficking Humans, which is part of the Oregon Human Trafficking Task Force. And back in the 80s, I've been a City Club member for a long time, we did a study on recidivism, and we found that so much money in our legal system was going towards the end, towards prisons, towards keeping people incarcerated. And we found that if you could put more money up front, that is where you can stop the long-term dollars being spent. So I think this is a great idea. This is putting more money up front. This is going to stop recidivism. And just to think of the emotional trauma the girls go through, you're going to stop this right away instead of it going on for years. So thank you so much for doing this. I think it's great. And I know some of you are coming to our, I'll put a plug in for our conference November 4th, 6th, and 7th. And we have, I think, 14 organizations are going to be presenting there. So thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you.
Miriam? I'm Miriam Green with Child Welfare, DHS.
You're closer to the mic.
Miriam Green with DHS Child Welfare, and I had not anticipated speaking today, which is why I was sitting in the back. And me not talking is pretty unusual, especially on this topic. So let me just say that I'm delighted to be here. I concur with what people have been saying about how far we've come from just 2 years ago and really seeing, you know, again, seeing, starting to see what was hidden and truly hidden in plain sight and the partnerships, particularly in a county and city this large, that we've come together and continue to and have differences of opinions but continue to keep coming back to the table to do what we can that's best for children, I just think is incredible, and it's been really a pleasure for me to be part of that. And the last thing I would just say is to echo what Esther was saying, that the level of trauma for these children is just phenomenal to listen to their stories, and the piece about being able to have upfront services within that first hour from SARC, as well as the kind of police response we've had, has just been absolutely wonderful. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Jocelyn Baker, Department of Community Justice, Multnomah County. It makes me feel so happy to hear you, to hear language change in this room, to hear about shelter and victim services. And as we all are bringing this message, everyone here in this room, my partner is bringing this message about really understanding what these youth need and really understanding that if there's not a person that can talk to them at the front of the situation, a compassionate police officer who's supported by a team that's funded and all those good things, that has partnerships with an advocate that also isn't working 60 cases like they are currently, I can't imagine how hard it, you know, that will help all the work that we do down the line. If we can have conversations with the youth right up front and conversations with our other community partners so that no matter which door this kid comes in, if they come in an emergency room, they make contact with a police officer, they meet someone from SARC, that everybody understands the trauma that they're experiencing, that they understand, like Commissioner Saltzman said, that these kids are victims, that they're not criminals, that they're not delinquents, they're not thrill seekers. They're victims of horrible, horrible abuse and exploitation. I can't imagine how hard it was for Esther to sit up here and say that they're not taking cases, because that really gets at the heart of what they're trying to do at SARC. And so by the resources that you're going to bring through this ordinance to be able to support law enforcement and SARC and that partnership that has already been in place and reinforcing that good work is incredibly powerful to the work that we're doing. it shows a beautiful balance of demand and supply, and really understanding that these how these youth are victimized, and also holding accountable offenders. So I really appreciate the broadening understanding of this issue, and thank you so much for this ordinance and for the sustainable funds that will be available. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
So we have Sergeant Geiger and Lieutenant Andrews from the Bureau. I didn't know whether you wanted to say anything, or are you just here to listen?
We're just here to listen.
Okay. Then that completes our...
Has anyone signed up?
Yes, we have two people signed up. Shedrick Wilkins and Eric Olaf. I think Mr. Olaf just went out to check on his car.
Okay. Well, if he comes... Who? Shedrick.
I didn't know I signed up to talk. That's okay.
Okay, thanks.
I'm here to listen.
Excellent. So we will listen to his testimony when he returns. But let's proceed with the vote, unless there's council discussion.
So I have a couple of questions, and I don't know whether to address them to Dan or to Amy or sort of...
We also have city attorney.
City attorney. Well, yeah. Let's start with you, Commissioner Saltzman. So I am in strong support of the ordinance and the model that's been established. The two pieces that the ordinance, though, does not address are who ultimately spends the money, and at the city level, who's charged with coordinating the services. And so it says in the ordinance that the police will do an annual accounting. It has a formula, 25% and 75% in terms of the split, but it doesn't. It's not explicit about how the money is spent and who makes those decisions. And the reason I raise that question is that, as Commissioner McKeel knows, the city and the county right now are in a pretty dynamic discussion about how to better align the delivery of homeless services. And so the key folks on both sides are frankly going back to Resolution A and asking whether it still has utility. Mm-hmm. And we've done some new budgeting where we've looked at every dollar coming in the system to determine whether we're spending the money efficiently. And it turns out, as you would expect, we're both providing similar services in certain areas. That makes no sense. So what would be helpful for me, just before we close out this excellent presentation, is have a clear understanding of how the money would be spent and what would be the role of the city and the county in that process.
Well, I think our intent, and we actually discussed this but did not actually include it, but I'm certainly open to a friendly amendment to that effect, would be to have, the Bureau will make the decisions, but I'd like to have them have the advice of the Portland Bureau of Housing, Human Rights Commission, and somebody, appropriate source from the county that would sort of advise the Bureau on where...
If I could I offer a friendly amendment? Now that we have Jocelyn and the coordinating committee, I think that is perhaps a better place for us to get advice. It's a... I think that would include all of that and more. The NGOs, the nonprofits, I think are important to include in that discussion as well. So if I could offer that as a friendly amendment. To your legislative intent?
Just so I'm clear, that would be the advisory body to the decision maker. In this case, the decision maker would be the police bureau?
Right. Ultimately, the city council, but yeah.
Well, ultimately, it comes to the city council.
The police bureau will be making the recommendation.
They present it to the city council as part of the annual budget process.
I'm at the annual budget process.
Right.
But that's helpful to know, too, because that way we can better coordinate and align the existing shelter services we're investing in. So I think that's a promising start, and then we can test drive it.
I don't think we need an amendment. It just conveys our legislative intent, this discussion.
Okay. Great. Thanks for bringing that up.
Thank you very much.
I had a question. One of the parts of this that I really like is we're amending city code to say that we're not going to be requiring victims to forfeit their property. So we're not allowed to say that victims... We're not allowed to do something that goes beyond what state law says, which defines people who sell sex as well as people who buy sex as a misdemeanor crime. What this ordinance does is says that people who sell or are forced to sell aren't subject to our forfeiture requirements, which is what this funding stream is. Do we have in our legislative agenda a request to make a change at the state law to as was mentioned by Jocelyn, to change the language so that the victims are not further criminalized?
Yes, we do. In fact, we'll be reviewing our state legislative agenda this afternoon, but that is in there to distinguish between basically, you know, considering women or men who are being prostituted or trafficked to be not criminal.
Okay, great. And do we have any estimate as to how much how much money might be raised through this stream?
We don't at this point.
Okay.
And if I could just follow up on, Amanda, your question, and I know that Commissioner McKeel and Commissioner Saltzman are working with Senator Wyden at the federal level. Now, we, in the shelter services area, we actually have some dedicated streams of money that come to our community. I'm thinking about, for example, dedicated money for people living with AIDS, where we provide specific shelter and services. Is it your understanding that the senator is trying to craft a federal program which would, in the nature of an entitlement, which would provide block grant money to the states to cover some of these costs?
Yes, that's his bigger piece of legislation that he's working on, but he did also, he's very close to securing, as Commissioner McKeel said, a $900,000 appropriation for Portland for services for victims of human trafficking. But the larger legislation is to do exactly that, block grants for cities.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, if it's all right, we just had Judge Waller.
Absolutely.
Who was one of our invited panelists, arrive. And
welcome, Your Honor. Please come
up. Judge Waller.
All right, we had lawyers late.
It's all right.
Hearings.
Welcome.
Welcome. This is my usual line in a courtroom. thank you for giving me the time to address the council. I'm sorry I'm later than I anticipated. This is a subject that is near and dear to my heart because it deals often with children who are very vulnerable. And sometimes they are children who are vulnerable because of the well-intended intervention of the state, the court, the Department of Human Services. And it's not getting to a point where they are having children who don't have permanency in their lives. And it makes them very vulnerable to those who are willing to see them as easy prey and easy victims. We've known that we've had a gap in our service continuum for this population of children. I'm very proud of the work done in Portland and Multnomah County in really changing the perspective of young girls who are involved in prostitution activities to look at them as victims and not as offenders. That's a tremendous step forward in terms of being sure that we have the right kinds of services and supports in place for them. I think that it is also a great testament to the collaborative nature of our community that we've had so many agencies, so many people, so many parts of the private sector come forward and say that they really see this as a need. And so there is grant funding that is in the works that we anticipate that we have gotten, but having the ability to have sustainable funding to provide for the full service continuum that young women and girls need is absolutely would be a tremendous gift. We can do good work when we have grant money and we can put things together. The trick is always in can we sustain it? And quite frankly, using the proceeds of those who are benefiting from their activity in some fashion, wouldn't that be a wonderful way of sustaining it, that if you are going to engage in prostitution activities, then you are going to end up being at risk of having to pay for those services that will support young girls? And we really need, it is a full range of services that we need in terms of looking at what young girls need. It is having enough advocates available so that people can really support them and stand by them and stand with law enforcement and helping them understand and make sure that we have a right plan. It is the kind of shelter that we need. We know that we need something that is very supportive, that gives young girls that feeling that they are being nurtured and cared for, and at the same time addresses the issue that we see that frustrates all of us, from judges to law enforcement to caseworkers, that it is a hard population to hold on to, that the pull of those who are in control is often very strong, and that we need to be as strong, if not stronger, in our efforts to make sure that we break that hold, at the same time making sure that young girls understand that they are, in fact, victims, and that we are treating them as victims, and that we are not going to make them feel that they are, in fact, in some sense, offenders and less worthy than our full support. So we know that we need the right kinds of shelters. We know that we need DHS to be able to respond after hours, that after hours response and ability to respond quickly and on the spot is imperative in terms of the well-being of these young girls. Oftentimes, it is the moment in time that counts, and we need to be 24/7 being able to respond in a thoughtful, planful manner for these young girls. I will tell you a quick story so that you have a visual image of what happens. I had a young girl who everyone assumed she was involved in prostitution activities. She'd been in a permanent placement that had disrupted, which I think for her was a tragedy and not something she easily recovered from. And she went from placement to placement and finally was on her own. She ended up with some criminal charges. She gave birth to a baby, her second child, at a very, very young age. It was discovered that there was a warrant on the delinquency charges. And she was taken from the hospital in less than 24 hours to detention, where it was discovered that she had an infection and was released to the Department of Human Services. She was picked up by a caseworker who made a brief stop, and she was out the door, and not to be seen for weeks and weeks. And, of course, we were all terrified that her medical condition, her vulnerability, the grief of having just given birth and not had any contact with her baby would point her in one direction and one direction only. So that's the story of one child. And she, although in many books she might not have been considered a child, she was still a child legally. She was still a child in terms of her maturity and her development. And what we needed as a system was the ability to respond very, very quickly to get her immediately into the right kind of placement. Simply placing her back into a foster home or holding her in detention was not going to meet the needs that she had at that time. And so I'm hoping that having sustainable funding that will support the entire continuum of services and need for this very, very vulnerable population that sometimes, through our good efforts, probably we have, when we've not been able to find permanency for children in our foster care system, we know that they are sometimes much more vulnerable in terms of being victims and being pulled into activities that at times entice them, but we all know are really very dangerous and risky for them in the end. So I commend the council for considering this as a way of providing an ongoing and a source of funding to keep the services and the good work that is being done in a very, very collaborative fashion in our community across private, public, federal, state, county, city. I think it is great that we have so many eyes and ears on this very, very important issue.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll answer any questions if there are any questions about.
Thank you very much, you. Your Honor. Anyone else wish to testify?
Yeah, Mr. Olaf.
Mr. Olaf.
Eric.
Welcome back. Come on up. No, you come up at the same time. It'd be great. Mr. Olaf, come on up. No, come on up. It's, you're used to doing communications, but we, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help you count down
okay.
3 minutes.
Actually, I need to ask, can I ask a question about the bill before we get the time? I wasn't sure if this, anybody picking up a prostitute, even if she's over the legal age, is subject to having their vehicle taken?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. So, okay, well, I think this bill is making the mistake of seeing this thing very much in black and white, lumping everyone in one category. I agree that enslaving these very young girls, anyone under 18, should be considered a very heinous crime. But to put that on the same level as two consenting adults having sex where money is involved is absurd, frankly. In many very forward countries, prostitution is not even a crime. In fact, in one of our own states, Nevada, this is really like punishing someone for selling pot on the same level of someone with selling meth. I think these should be decided case by case. You can't punish somebody, two consenting adults where a little money is exchanged, on the same level with a pimp who has enslaved somebody, some young girl. It's very black and white. I could see this as very detrimental to somebody's life. It could be even some kid who's under 18 where it's the age thing is not even as big a crime. Take their car, that may be their only source of getting to work. You pretty much destroy their whole livelihood. That's all I have to say.
Thanks for your testimony.
Yeah.
Mr. Ola.
Amen. Good testimony, brother. Okay, well, I throw a little spice into the thing, okay, because from my point of view, I want to speak for the prostitutes, and I want to make it clear I'm not one, okay? But anyway, we have a trade which we have plied for thousands of years. And you think that you're going to stop this trade by passing some laws? Give me a break. God, come on. Stop punishing people. My goodness. Okay, and I'm solution-oriented, okay? You know, in Amsterdam, it wasn't until like 5 years ago they made prostitution legal. Although you could walk down this street, and I did, and there were prostitutes in the window, and you could take your pick. Wapto, empty out there. I want to be a prostitute, okay? And you're not going to stop me. And there are people out there that want to buy my service. And boy, I'll tell you, it's pretty rough out there, okay? It'd be really nice if we were safe and secure, where nobody could harm us and nobody could give us AIDS, nobody could beat us up. Okay? Why not let us go in Wapato jail? Okay, talk about income stream, okay? We get 50% cut. They get to do whatever they want to their cell. Okay, let's be mature about this. Come on. Among consenting adults, like the gentleman before me expressed. Okay? And I think that would be a very mature thing, although I'm well aware politically quite a step. But thanks for the time. Appreciate that.
Thanks for taking the time to testify.
Mayor, may I just comment on the last two? Because if you had sat in my seat and heard the stories of survivors who do not choose this as a consenting adult, they are forced into it, whether they are children or adults, you would not be making those statements. At least I hope you would not be making those statements. And I urge you to look into the issue of human trafficking in Portland and to know that this is a serious problem, and it is not something that's happened. It may have been something that's been happening for centuries, but it's not something that we will tolerate in our community.
We've given you the opportunity to testify. Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Well, it's gratifying to observe that over the past 8 years that I've been here, that this council has gone from treating issues like this, but specifically prostitution, but also the selling and purchasing of drugs, as a law enforcement problem, for an example, prostitution-free zones, to really how we should be focused on addressing these issues, and that is solution-oriented problem solving. That sounds like maybe the word of the day, but from my vantage point, having sat here and voted against every prostitution-free zone and every drug-free zone for years based on the argument, and oftentimes by myself, based on the argument that how is it helping the community or the persons that are either subject to the control of a pimp or addicted to a drug by moving them from one neighborhood to another by drawing a political boundary. To go from those arguments, including the police bureau in full force, making those arguments to now Commissioner Saltzman leading with these series of initiatives to address the core reasons that women are forced into prostitution. And I want to compliment and agree with the comments that Commissioner Fritz just made. I thought the same thing, but have learned a long time ago to keep those thoughts to myself. They don't necessarily change people's minds, but I agree wholeheartedly with what she said. To go from that policy approach to this approach today, I hope you appreciate how distinct that makes the city of Portland. I didn't understand how distinct our approach was until I began working with the Police Bureau on the service coordination team model, which is really how this program created using that model. That is that the Police Bureau goes from this model of enforcing the laws against lawbreakers, and there are many officers, unfortunately, who still think like that, to this problem-solving approach. And there are more and more officers who think like that. And I think that is the future of the Police Bureau, and those officers that still think of these as social service programs and not creative law enforcement tools are going to catch on, I think, that this is really a way not just to help women that have been victimized, but to reduce crime. It's actually a problem-solving crime reduction tool witnessed by a dramatic reduction in prostitution in East Portland and a dramatic reduction using the same tools in the sales and use of drugs in Old Town. Over a third drop in crime since we've started using these tools. So I'm sorry to go on and on about this, but we've been visited by other cities from throughout the United States and beyond because of this approach that we're all talking about right here. So this is something that I hope everybody recognizes is not just a common sense approach to a problem. This is a very cutting-edge law enforcement tool. And I really appreciate it a lot. I appreciate the discussion here today, the tenor, and I, again, want to acknowledge and commend Commissioner Saltzman for his ongoing efforts on helping victims of abuse at all levels. Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for spearheading this, and Commissioner McKeel at the county, and for all of our community partners. Thank you, Chair. I'm very proud that you're an ONI employee. I thank you for all your good work. And Amy Chu in Commissioner Saltzman's office has done a lot of great work on this also. We think, and the title of the ordinance is on human trafficking, and I need to note that it's not just prostitution that we're talking about, although this funding stream is for victims of prostitution. But there are people placed in human servitude in our community, in domestic servitude, in farm workers, day laborers who are not paid. There's a lot of bad stuff going on in our community, and we can no longer say these are consenting adults. This is not normal. This is not okay. This is a start, and it's a place marker, and I greatly appreciate both Commissioner Saltzman for bringing it up and Mayor Adams as police commissioner for saying, yeah, that's great. That's a good thing. We should do that. This is an example of us all on this council caring about this issue and taking whatever steps are necessary. It's not going to be enough of a funding stream, and I think we should, in the budget process, as Commissioner Fish brought up, look at the whole forfeiture pie, perhaps, or other funding streams. I appreciated the comments that this does make it easier to get grants, and that's another reason for doing it. But we need to focus at the state legislature to make that change in state law. I really appreciated Jerry talking about talking to 7th and 8th graders. That's where it's starting these days. And our high schools, we need to focus on prevention. We're trying to get ahead of the criminalization part with treatment. We need to teach young girls and young boys that this is happening and that the lure of a great life in Las Vegas or wherever is not real, it's not true, it's not going to happen. You don't get something for free, and it's going to hurt. So the more we can work again with the Police Bureau in the Girl Strength Program and in all of our other education programs to let our school students know that this is happening in our community and how they can defend against it, that's part of what we need to do too. And I know that my colleagues and I are very committed to that. So thank you very much for being here today. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for bringing this up again. It's something we need to keep talking about and we need to keep speaking about because it's important. Aye.
Fish?
I want to add my voice of thanks to my colleague Dan Saltzman and to County Commissioner Diane McKeel. And I'm reminded, Diane, that this is one of a number of issues that where you have been partnering with the city to get results. And you've, for example, been working with the Housing Bureau and my office on veterans. And as I look at actually the state of the relationship between the county and the city, I'd be hard-pressed to say that there's been a time in recent history when we've had this level of collaboration. And it's understandable because in this recession, we have to change the way we do business. You don't have the resources that you need to deliver services. We don't have the resources. So we are compelled to find ways of working together in new and creative ways. And I think this is an example of a very creative approach. And I like what the judge said about, you know, this being not just filling a gap in the service continuum, but being a very creative solution to the problem. I also appreciate the discussion about the shift from the notion of an underage girl, a teenager, being a perpetrator versus an offender versus a victim. And as the father of a teenage daughter, that particularly strikes me as I think about the risk that young girls are put at in our community. I want to just use this opportunity, though, to just identify the bigger elephant in the room, which is every time we have these conversations, what we're reminded is the side of the budget where we're constantly squeezed is on the service dollars. We are so creative on the capital side, whether we're using tax increment financing dollars, general fund dollars, tax credits, leverage. We've really figured out the game of building things. But in this instance, in the 10-year plan to end homelessness, in so many of the initiatives we're working on together, the area of risk is on the service dollars. They are at risk at the federal level and the state level. And the problem is, if you don't have the service dollars, you're taking out the piece of the puzzle that ensures a successful outcome. We know that we can't just put people in shelters or we can't just put people in housing. If you don't marry it with the services, then it's a dead end, and we know that. But the reality is the biggest risk to our systems and the continuum of services across the board are the service dollars. So when we go into this tough budget cycle at the city, county, and at the state level, and as we talk to our federal partners, I think that's where the focus has to be. We need those service dollars. We know how to do the other side of the ledger. But without those service dollars, we're just not going to be successful. And I think that's our great challenge. Anyway, to the two commissioners, congratulations, and I'm proud to support your effort. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, as Commissioner Fish just said, this money is going dedicated to services. It's not a capital funding source. It's to provide victim services, whether it's services for the victims themselves or shelter services. And then part of it is also to go to Portland Police Bureau's ongoing activities and investigations into human trafficking and prostitution, because that's really where the difficulty lay. We get federal grants, as I think Judge Waller said, but they often rely on us to pick up those activities after a certain amount of time, and that's always where we're scrambling, whether it's a housing grant or, in this case, grants from what we hope will be coming from Congress under Senator Wyden's leadership. So I just wanted to thank everybody for being here. I do think this represents, you know, initially small but growing opportunity to have sustainable funding for these services. I want to thank County Commissioner Diane McKeel for her leadership and I want to thank all the people in the community who have really gotten this discussion to the level of leadership, elected officials. That includes, I want to thank the Mayor's Office and the Portland Police Bureau for their increasing focus on this activity. Also, the Sexual Assault Resource Center, the Department of Human Services for the very challenging work that they do every day on behalf of our children. Certainly, Multnomah County Court, and Judge Waller, the Juvenile Rights Project. And then finally, I wanted to thank my staff, Amy True, who helped lead this effort, but also with the assistance of Shannon Callahan of my office and also Ellen Osniak of the city attorney's office. So I want to thank them for their help. And as I said in my opening remarks, just a couple of weeks ago, we hired an outside counsel to get more aggressive about forfeiture. So while we can't bank on this money right away, I think over time, with this specialized and renewed effort to go after forfeited assets, that we can count on more money coming this way for these services. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner McKeel for their leadership on this issue and for bringing this forward. I really appreciate it, Commissioner Saltzman. This is a vile and heinous crime in our city that is not served well with euphemisms or code phrases. Recent weeks, as part of our efforts to open up shelter beds for the first time in the city's history for these victims, had an opportunity to learn of some individual cases and code words and phrases that hide the horrible nature of this crime do not do it justice. I mean, it was shared with me as a story of a 15-year-old girl who was being sexually exploited for commercial purposes, and it happens in our city. So I want to thank everyone here for helping to open Portlanders' eyes to the true nature of this horrible, horrible problem. The mechanism that we're approving today will be important to provide that sustainable funding. And so I'm happy to co-sponsor it, happy to support it. And in the coming weeks, we'll have some additional announcements to really put the focus on the victims and helping them get out of this horrible life. So thank you very much. Aye. Approved. That leads us to, I believe, 1402. What do you got?
I have 1408 and 1410 left.
All right. Sorry, I keep going back to the room. Yes, let's do 1408. Non-emergency ordinance, item number 1408.
Authorize revenue bonds for urban renewal areas.
Mr. Johansson.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Eric Johansson, City Treasurer. This ordinance authorizes up to $315.5 million of bonds to provide interim financing for urban renewal projects in seven of the city's urban renewal areas. As you may recall, a significant portion of urban renewal projects are funded through the issuance of lines of credit. At such time as the balances on these lines of credit get to be sufficiently large, we then roll those lines of credit out into long-term urban renewal bonds that are secured by and payable solely from the tax increment revenues of the urban renewal areas. This proposed authorization includes about $209 million for additional projects that are expected to be incurred over the next 3 years in these seven urban renewal areas. The list of the projects is included in the cover memo to the particular ordinance. And as you may remember, that no projects can be funded through the line of credit unless they've first been approved in PDC's adopted budgets. In addition to the new money component, about $107 million of balances on outstanding lines of credit will be rolled forward onto this new authorization, constituting the full $315 million. And in addition to authorizing the interim financing, this proposed ordinance also authorizes the bonds that will take out the interim financing. We expect that we'll be issuing bonds periodically in the various districts over the next several years, as balances on the lines of credit become sufficiently large to make long-term financing cost-effective. This is a non-emergency ordinance. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Discussion from council.
So I was just looking at the list of projects. Some of these, I assume PDC has to actually approve a project before we actually use this money to pay for it. I mean, I see some projects in there which, you know, we may or may not know are happening in 2011 and 2012. So
the timing can be flexible. Council serving as a budget committee will certainly see those projects before the budget is adopted.
This is kind of our best forecast at this point.
I think it's correct to characterize it as the best forecast that PDC has at this point in time.
Not binding. Not on the council.
Correct. Okay.
Other discussion? All right, this moves to a second reading next week. That gets us to 1410, a non-emergency ordinance.
Authorize a sole source contract with EcoWise Australia Pty Limited for pathogen catchment budget model modification analysis.
Thank you.
Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. It actually is an emergency ordinance.
Yes.
Oh, I apologize.
And this is part of our ongoing effort to obtain a variance on the treatment provision of LT2. So.
That's correct. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau. With me is Yona Akagi, our regulatory compliance manager and the LT2 variance project manager. This is an emergency ordinance related to our attempt to achieve a treatment variance under LT2. It authorizes a sole source contract with EcoWise Australia for something called the pathogen catchment budget model and to modification analysis of that model. Among many of the things that we're going to be required to do in order to qualify for a variance, EPA is requiring Portland to use a mathematical model to model crypto concentrations and movement in the Bull Run watershed. They suggested that we use the model created by EcoWise, but they also recognized that that model, which was created in Australia for Australian conditions, would require significant modification. This is the only known model that is capable of modeling the movement of pathogens in a watershed such as ours, and it went through some significant modifications. We have already done that through one of our existing contracts using a local firm which subcontracted with EcoWise. We're now done with that, and we need to move on to phase two, which is the actual running of the model under the various scenarios that we could conceivably see in the watershed. And we've worked on those scenarios with EcoWise, with our peer review group, with our city staff, and with the EPA. EcoWise did do all of the work on phase one of the model project. They're the sole holder and primary authors of the original code for the model. It's proprietary computer code, which has not been released to the public and was modified specifically for the Portland Water Bureau. EcoWise is the only firm available to make the required modifications and enhancements to the model for us to run the various scenarios. Obviously, we're under a time crunch. We're trying to finish all the work that we're doing in order to obtain the data, in order to submit to the EPA a variance application early next year. That's why we're doing an emergency ordinance. We always knew we were doing a phase two, but we had to ensure that phase one was successful, that the model could indeed be modified and adapted to the Bull Run North American climate. Now that we know that, we need to move on to phase two. Yona and I are happy to answer any questions you might have of us.
All right. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Carla, can you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Well, we shouldn't underestimate or underappreciate the amount of work that is reflected by this effort with David and Yona to obtain a variance or a treatment system that by all accounts we just don't need. There are various opinions about whether or not water should be covered when it's stored within a city. This is not that debate. This is a debate about whether or not water coming from its source should be treated. And if there is any possibility of any city in the United States to receive a variance from that LT2 requirement, Portland will get it. We're doing all of the right things. David has an ongoing conversation with EPA. We have ongoing conversations with our congressional delegation, particularly Senator Merkley and most recently I know Mayor Adams had a conversation with Senator Wyden. So we're doing all the right things. I feel good about it. The EPA doesn't feel so good about it, as they keep telling us, but that doesn't mean we aren't going to do everything within our power to try to get this variance, and this is an example of that. So thank you for your great work on this. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard, for your leadership on this and your commitment to getting this variance. Thank you, David and Yoni, for answering my staff's question. And Patty Howard did some good analysis for me. I greatly appreciate your diligence. I hope we can save that money by not having to build the UV plant. And thank you for actually being groundbreaking across the nation in your diligence on this work to see if we can get the variance. Aye.
Bish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
This is important work, and we'll hope the model results are favorable for us in our efforts to get the waiver. Aye.
Adams?
I like the fact, Commissioner Leonard and Director Schaff and team, that you are scouring the globe for the best experts to provide the science to the federal government that, based on everything we know thus far, shows that we deserve this variance, not based on politics, not based on any other reason than merit. So thank you. Aye.
Thank you.